Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
A lot of new things coming down in the Brian Koberger case, a lot. What was thought to be maybe the last hearing before the trial starts is probably the first of many more hearings before the trial starts. Joining me to discuss, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. We've been talking about this case now for almost 3 years.
Yeah.
Which is kind of hard to
believe. How we met.
I know. It's crazy, but we're coming up on the 3-year mark of this in November. And you consider we're, you know, almost into June. That ain't that far off. One thing that has been very difficult for the defense of Brian Koberger to get out there is any sort of alibi. They had a deadline last summer. What's your alibi going to be? We waited. They said they were going to have one. And then, poof, here's the alibi. He likes to look at the stars.
No.
On a night that had no stars, because
no,
it was
never done, and I've never done it before either.
No, and has no history of going out and looking at the stars. Right. It was that night. That was the night that he was out going to do it. So the judge basically said, "Nah, that's not an alibi. That's a nice little, you know, Hallmark story. Card or something, nice like, let's look at the stars together while the kids are murdered in the house." But that's not reality. Well, surprise, surprise, they are throwing another thing at the wall, and this time alternate suspect theory. Alternate perpetrator is what has been brought up. They're saying a third-party suspect is responsible for the murders of the 4 college students in Moscow, Idaho. Now, who is this third party? Well, they didn't bring that to the table. They're just, it's that guy. They have until, I believe, late May. There's a specific date on this. I don't have it directly in front of me to bring to the judge what this theory is. And it's under seal at this moment in time. So the judge will then decide, is this a valid enough theory that they can argue this in court? You know? You don't know. You'd be surprised sometimes what gets allowed as a third-party culprit in court. And in some places, it's like, that's insane. And in some places, that's insane. And it's allowed. So we'll see what happens. This judge doesn't seem to be one that really minces words or puts up with BS. Robin, what's your thoughts on this, trying to introduce this this late in the game?
It's, again, she's doing all she can to earn her money for reasonable doubt to save his life. But it's interesting, you know, as you're saying this, you know, trying to go with this alternate, you know, suspect or perpetrator theory of this. Here's what I think they're hoping, you know, from, remember, there's a glove that had blood in it that was at, that is at the house, and they had other people's blood on the banister.
Yeah.
DNA, right?
DNA, so not even blood, DNA. Yeah.
DNA, right. So here's what I think they're hoping, that they can do a match to that DNA they found, that someone's buried inside of at a graveyard somewhere, that actually was a serial killer that was unfound before, and they can blame it on him. I really think they're trying to identify the DNA of this unsub and pin it on someone else that's gone, because otherwise, what do you got? I don't want to laugh about it, make it flippant, but I mean, but they are going for so many straws on this. It's just like, at what point do you just say we're done?
Well, it makes you wonder, okay, we're going to go for an alternate suspect. How? Like, who are you picking for this? And the only thing I can think of is that they did, if they have the DNA of what they found in that glove or on the banister or under her fingernails, because there was unmarked or unknown, but Koberger's right. wasn't excluded from being there. My guess maybe is that it's from the glove or the banister, and they themselves on the defense did a DNA, you know, reverse yep. lookup or something, or IgG or whatever it may be. And whoever lucky person that is going to be brought into this, at least in the pretrial motions. And it's going to be, how can we pin this over here? It just right. how can we make these blocks work together? And if it doesn't work, the judge is going to say bye-bye.
So what I'm thinking that they're probably going to try to do, boy, again, just pure
conjecture, yeah.
Is, you know, from, again, based on Howard Bloom's great work, I'm thinking, you know, because remember, they're kind of throwing out there as a possibility that this the drug dealer kind of angle on mm-hmm. things. So if they can get that DNA and match it to a potential drug dealer or something, yeah. that's a decent, reasonable doubt they might be trying to throw out there as a potential murderer instead of Koberger.
Yeah, I mean, if you get somebody that has a little shadiness to them,
maybe a conviction, maybe, you know, a rap sheet somewhere, because, you know, remember, Koberger doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Kind of. He's got a rap sheet of well, not a rap sheet. He's got, you know, a history of drug abuse and things like that. But if they can get it pinned on someone, or at least thought about someone that actually has a worse rap sheet than Koberger's background or shady background, that might work.
But do you think they're going to find somebody that's more warm, kind, inviting, and just an all-around good spirit that's going to be something that's not quite as warm as Brian Koberger, because he exudes all of those traits. Not at all. That's the other part of this. You get somebody else in there. Koberger is about as cold as it gets when it comes to suspects in something like this. There's not a lot of emotion.
So Tony, I'm sorry, we're going to reference the other show that we're just talking about, talking about the Karen Reed case.
Yeah.
You gave a great example of what happened to you when you were in fourth grade, it was?
Yeah,
on the playground. Yep. Girl falls down. You ran away mm-hmm. Because that's what kids do when we see bad things happen. And you live with that guilt for so long that you bumped into her later on when you were 19 years old and you apologized.
Yes.
So, because that's what people with empathy that aren't psychopaths do. And so now imagine Koberger, from what we know from the data points we have using mm-hmm. our thinking cap and our thought process, you know, can you imagine him doing that on the playground and then later on when he's 19 apologizing to someone for hurting them on the playground or even just witnessing?
I think it'd be one of those "she had that coming" thought processes.
Can I watch it again to see if I get some emotional rise from
it? Yeah, that's the weird part. That yes. Yeah. And that's what separates folks like that from folks like us.
Yes. And that's like, why it's also very hard to remember. Yeah. We talk about the challenge of this in dealing with Koberger and people like Koberger when trying to do behavioral assessments, because when you're, again, we're not clinicians, we're mm-hmm. just average Joes with experience. You know, looking at someone that's edging up on psychopathy, they just don't respond and interact with the world in the same way as everyone else.
Yeah, I agree. And the interesting part of the Koberger case is his own words are what sink him even more. I mean, similar to the Karen Reed case in many ways. And it's hard because people will go, well, he was a teenager. This was several years before. Yeah, I mean, those writings were about roughly, 10-ish years before this took place. But he was recognizing something, a change in his mind, a change in his thinking, a change in his behavior, a change in empathy, where he seemed to have recognized that he had it at a younger age, and then it was just gone. And he didn't know why. He was very troubled by it. He couldn't figure out what it was, but he couldn't seem to ever get it back either. And clearly that writing, was many years before these crimes took place, but it's something he clearly struggled with in his relationships, his social circle or lack thereof. Everybody kind of has the same opinion of Ryan Koberger of just being really awkward, cold, disconnected in many ways. And then you start looking at his behavior and, what he's allegedly done, whether it be setting up that security camera in his neighbor's house that he was also a teaching assistant with, and then having access to the Wi-Fi and the password and everything, to his interactions with his students, and then the sudden change in behavior after the murders took place in the school setting. All of those speak very, very loudly to what his mindset is. And if you look at it and go, okay, well, what would the profile of someone like this have to be? I mean, someone who, is getting some sort of a rise out of this, but clearly doesn't have empathy, if they're able to do this and just move on. And that kind of fits the mold of Koberger a bit, at least as we know it right now.
Yeah, it definitely does. And this is going to be a really good case study, one way or the other, for people for years to come on the arcs of people like this. And, again, the saddest part of this whole thing is the tragic loss of the life on both sides. I feel such, compassion for everyone involved in this, because it's just such a lot of effort to try to save him. Mm-hmm. And because no one could, or others weren't able to be saved either.
Yeah. And that's the really sad part about all of this is I believe, his dad cared. I believe his mom cared. I don't know all the dynamics, but the fact is dad's, willing to go out there and talk to the neighbor even and go like, hey, my son's kind of awkward and, he could use a friend. However he phrased it, he had his son's best interests at heart. Yeah. He was thinking about his son, and he recognized that, he's kind of an odd duck. But he still loved his son, and he wanted to do, the best he could for him. But at some point, there's only so much you can do. And if someone has that broken of a brain, for whatever reason that is, they're going to go down their own path. You can't.
You ask yourself, what could have been done? I don't know. I don't know either, because when you look at it, no one. From the optic we have, we weren't in the family, but from the optic we have through all the writings and Howard Bloom's work and everything else, no one ever gave up on him.
Yeah.
And so which makes it really, really tragic, because in every other case or many other cases we look at, you're like, oh, if only this had been done, or someone recognized the signs, or they interjected themselves. But that was done all the time with him. I mean, people were very compelled to try to do something and did do things. Mm-hmm. And we're still left with four dead babies.
Yeah,
and I mean, babies as, because they're someone's babies. I always talk about our kids as our babies.
Yeah, they always will be. Yeah, no matter what.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.